Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Howdy, hour number two here on the show, Tiki and Tierney. The Tiki and Tierney Show. What's happening? Coming from our studios here, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. You got a big hour. We're going to get to the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Going to get to them in a moment here. Now, let's not get...
let's not be cantankerous.
Cantankerous. Come on now, let's not get a little too cantankerous.
We're having a nice little conversation here, boys.
Have a nice little conversation now here, boys. Otherwise, we're going to have to hang up and not let this happen no more. Not get this thing too cantankerous, you know what I'm saying? Jerry, that was last year when Jerry was going to have a little Jerry moment on 105.3 The Fan. Well,
that was great.
That was, we were losing. I was crying. I was laughing so hard because I kept impersonating him. So Jerry was back on 105.3 The Fan, as he often is. He had a great relationship with those guys, and it's how he gets his messaging out.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to every time he comes down a corridor, there's 40 microphones in his face. But he goes on the Dallas station, always has a great spot, and you know it's revealing. It's not just one of these, well, let me go on there and say nothing. Jerry goes on there to say what needs to be said, and he takes you behind the curtain of his team. This was an interesting conversation. Let me play this for you. Let's play it, then we can react here, Teague. Jerry Jones on preventing injuries at the quarterback spot, et cetera, obviously reacting to the Dak Prescott situation. Here's Jerry Jones.
What it does remind me, though, is that you cannot figure in as a part of your offense. You really are vulnerable when you really put a running game in that really relies, not relies, but just really utilizes a lot the running game with the quarterback. This game just is going to get you, you're going to get hurt. And so with your quarterback, and in this particular case, I don't even want to use the word quarterback, with Dak and all of the many things that he means to our team, we've got to be very judicious when we expose him in the future.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting because he's basically saying we need to augment how we play, but if you do that, then you're getting away from one of Dak's great strengths here. Well, what's your takeaway there, Teague?
Well, I mean, I know what he's saying, and I would say it's an emotional response because I can imagine in real time he was concerned that Dak got hurt running the ball, but more concerned because it happened – because he didn't get down. You know, he's trying to be a runner and not a quarterback. But, you know, he's a competitor, Dak Prescott. And just like Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and any of these guys, Kyler Murray, any of these guys, it's in their blood to compete and try to go pick up, you know, first downs or, if you're close enough, a touchdown. The challenge, I think, for quarterbacks in the current NFL, if you're not – like Lamar, who knows how to score and knows how to be a runner, knows how not to take hits, knows where, you know, a tackler is coming from, you often find yourself in a compromised situation. And so it's a skill to know how to get tackled, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And so I think as much as what Jerry Jones is saying is right, there's been guys who have gotten away with it for a long time. Steve Young did it his whole career. Now he got the crap beat out of him, you know, and ultimately it was concussions, but that was before they had these protections on quarterbacks. Really anybody, you can't hit him in the head as much anymore. But you know, I think if you do it right, it's such a valuable piece of offensive game planning and keeping a defense off balance. So I hear what he's saying, but I don't think you can go that far and say, Dak, never run anymore, because then you hamper what you can do.
Yes, it would be a disservice to the entire organization. But the one thing you can't deny here is that you look at, now I'm sure I'm going to omit a few unintentionally, so if anything jumps out, by all means, throw them in. But you look at the injuries to some of the great iconic players at the quarterback position the last, we'll make it last 10, 12, 15 years or so, whatever it is. You know, Tom Brady's knee was in the pocket.
That's right. That's a good point. That's why they all wear those big knee braces on their front legs, the immobile ones.
Correct. Carson Palmer was in the pocket against the Steelers, Kimo von Olhoffen.
That's right.
Aaron Rodgers, when he was slammed to the turf, and it was his clavicle, his shoulder, whatever it was. Clavicle, now, he was rolling out of the pocket, but it wasn't like he was trying to really juke.
He was just trying to escape a sack.
Escape a little bit. Other quarter, Tony Romo was caught from behind.
That was in the pocket, though, but it was in the pocket. Same thing. Escaping a sack.
Yep. Drew Brees' shoulder early. Was that when he tried to dive at the goal line with the Chargers?
He reached. And again, that's more like Dak. That's more like not knowing how to finish a play, like aggressively finish a play. There's certain ways you do it, and he didn't do it correctly and separated his shoulder. Yep. Almost ruined his career, but obviously now he's a Hall of Famer.
And then you watch Russell Wilson, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like he's a seconds away or a nanosecond away from getting his brains busted up.
Yeah.
And he rolls and tucks like he's a third tip black belt, you know, jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing what he does. So
your
point before about knowing how to take a hit and now knowing how to avoid injury, it's a good one.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, the examples the other way are plentiful as well. RG3, but that was just him being, you know, reckless with his body and just throwing his body into contact and, you know, snapping, or at least not snapping his ACL, but it partially tore it because of how he compromised his leg when he got tackled, which was exactly the same thing that happened with Carson Wentz when he went the way that he went. Cam Newton was always a runner. I mean, there's plenty of other examples of guys being runners and getting hurt like Dak got hurt. But you're right. I think the majority of quarterback injuries, they happen in the pocket, man. It's going to happen one way or another. I think if Dak wants to run, he just needs to be smart about it. And in this case, he was trying to do too much and ended up breaking his ankle.
But the guys with the true conventional pocket presence are the guys who stick around and play for a long time.
That's right.
That's right. Undeniable.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're just not exposed as much. Football's a violent, like, contact, body-to-body contact is not natural, man.
No, it's definitely not.
Right?
It's not.
And then at the speeds that these guys are at now, if you do it too often, you're going to get hurt, and you're going to have attrition, and your body's going to start breaking down. Which is why you revel at guys like Frank Gore, who we're just talking about, or kind of in a different way. But you admire the fact that he can still do it.
That's amazing.
Like literally, he can do it.
Because he knows how to do it. He dives at the, like, he's so proficient, just like ducking down and
getting down.
I don't know how he does it. Actually.
Get down. You get down. You don't take the shots, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I know it. I know what Jerry is trying to say. I just don't think that Dak is going to be full in on. Don't be an athlete if the opportunity presents itself.
Well, here's the other thing, too, though. If this was Andy Reid saying this about Patrick Mahomes, it's one thing because we can sit here and at least we can say, all right, it's going to be a little tougher to coach that out of him, to get that out of his repertoire, so to speak. But, you know, when you do finally get that out of the impulse is gone, you have one of the best passers we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. If you expunge that from Dak Prescott's game, you have a good thrower, but nothing more than that.
Yeah.
What makes him very good is his dual threat.
Agreed.
And that's
a
problem.
Agreed. He's valuable as a runner. So you can't not make that a part of your system. Now, you know, the real way to mitigate this is just to run your running back, is to give Dak Ezekiel Elliott, more carries. And, you know, Zeke, As much as we revered and admired his first few years, this season just feels like it's not clicking. And with him in the run game, now it's not all his fault. It's not just Zeke. This is an offensive line that's just gotten worse. They're not horrible, but they've gotten worse than where they were when Zeke was leading the league in rushing. And so, that old cliche where if you run the ball, you protect your quarterback, it's kind of fading for the Dallas Cowboys right now. And so they're kind of forced into situations where Dak ends up having to run. And at the end of the day, when you drop back as many times as they've dropped back the first 3 weeks of the season, mm-hmm. eventually you're going to run. Right? You just put yourself in harm's way when the quarterback is responsible for, you know, that much of the offensive production.
What do you think? I mean, conceivably the answer is as long as he lives, mm-hmm. and hopefully it's a long time, but I mean, what's the shelf life of Jerry weighing in? It's going to be another, you know, non-Super Bowl winning season.
Yeah.
More probability. I'll just leave the window slightly ajar. Mm-hmm. It's got to be old, man. But it's funny because, you know, my wife's from Dallas, and people really like Jerry.
Yeah.
They like him. We like him. He's affable. He's real. But, I mean, he's always weighing in. He's always expanded. I know he's the GM, you know, whatever he is. He's the owner.
Yeah.
He's always, but
I don't think there's any other owners that – You just don't hear from other owners.
Nah, probably Mark Cuban's close. Steinbrenner used to do that. There's very few. Not like that. But, like, what's the expiration date on Cowboy? I guess I'm asking rhetorically. Like, what is it where Cowboy fans sit up and say, come on, I don't
probably
want to
never
this guy anymore.
Honestly, probably never.
I tend to think that you're right, which is a very hard line to straddle to never – well, not that he never won, but to not have won – since 1996,
mm-hmm.
and to be out here preaching and espousing and confidently and hard-headedly, if you will, the same stuff, you know, basically 30 years later, but nothing's changed.
No, nothing's changed, but he's Jerry. You actually appreciate, because he is mostly honest. You know, it's not like he gets up there and blows smoke and, you know, tries to, I mean, he has these lofty goals that he throws out there, and he has maybe an inflated understanding of what his teams are.
Yep.
But he's an owner. He's passionate about it, and you kind of appreciate that in a way. If I'm a fan, I'd rather have that than someone who's, you know, an ambassador across the ocean.
Never come back, by the way. You were tight with your owner.
Yeah.
But how often did you guys see him?
Well, it depends. So Wellington, we would every practice when he was healthy, he was always there.
He was there every
always.
Practice.
He had his little like wasn't a cane. It was more like a seat that had a cane to it, and he'd just pull it out and he'd sit down on it. And so
like the kind you bust out on a fairway at a golf event, kind
yeah,
of deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He'd carry it around. It's lightweight, and he'd just be sitting there on the side of the practice field like almost every day.
Would he say anything?
No, never.
Yeah.
He wouldn't talk to anybody. He'd sit away. He's like me at my kids' baseball games, BT. Remember I told you when I go to AJ's baseball game, I'd go sit in my own tent and, you know, like little pop-up tent or get a chair and sit, you know, down the baseline in the outfield.
I didn't
want to talk to anybody.
Yep.
That's how Wellington was at Giants practice. Bob was different because Bob didn't come to practice. Bob Tissis didn't come to practices. But I'd see him frequently because he kind of took me under his wing as a New Yorker. And so he lived at the Regency, which was, I don't know, 15 blocks away from me. He would go to Feinstein's, which was a jazz club at the Regency, and hang out with his friends. And, you know, I'll never forget this. Someone was asking me about this the other day when he got sick. And this was 2004, before he passed away in 2005. I'll never forget this moment. We went to see him just to check on him. Me and my wife then, and my 2-year-old AJ, who's now 18, and he was playing with pool balls, like these cubes, these pool balls, mm-hmm. And just rolling them down the hall with AJ. And so AJ was like running after him down the hall, and Bob, this is Bob Tisch, man.
In the hospital or
this is in his apartment in the Regency.
Gotcha.
This is Bob Tisch, like rolling a pool ball down the hall for AJ to go chase after. It's something I'll never forget. I still have it actually. That pool ball.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, so it depends. Like if you, some owners aren't visible at all, mm-hmm. and they don't really have, you know, relationships with some of the players. Others are heavily involved, even though if you don't see them publicly like Jerry, but they have deep relationships with the players, like Arthur Blank down in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jerry clearly does. Mm-hmm. But we often don't know about it unless guys tell the stories.
I think what's frustrating is the owner who almost projects that he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And by even if that's not by design, the projection that you emit is interpreted as one of not caring when you don't weigh in on anything.
Right. That's right. And it's frustrating for the fan base.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Because it's like, do you even care?
That's my point. You'd rather have somebody, even though it's probably not quite this way, because at the end of the day, these owners have Lord knows how many hundreds of million dollars in the bank, and we're sitting there on the couch, you know, third down and one. Why didn't you run it off left side? Like, we process it probably differently, but quite differently. But at least you know if your owner is engaged and shows some visible frustration, we take solace in that. As crazy as that sounds, like an empty seat or an empty suit is frustrating.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So I think that to answer my own question, they're still down with Jerry because they know nobody wants to win more than Jerry.
That's right. He cares. He cares probably, you know, more than they do, and he's vocal about it more than they are, which is hard to do for fan bases.
No doubt, Teague. Let's stay on point. We're gonna get back to the Astros situation. We're gonna hit all the baseball stuff. How's Kershaw's back? What what the Rays have done so far? 3-0 on the Astros, but the Altuve situation's amazing. He is melting down in front of our eyes. Baseball gods aren't messing around. How do you break out of this? I'm going to talk to Ryan Roland Smith, who's part of the Seattle Mariners broadcasting. We've had him on, not the biggest name, admittedly, but great. Not good, great on the air. You guys want to check this out, we'll do that next. Talk a little baseball. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney's 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. It's 855-212-4CBS. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. Watching baseball at night will keep you up as well, but that's something we don't mind doing. Let's get into that. And right now, we've got two possible sweeps, at least trending in that direction. The Astros are down 3-0. The Dodgers are down 2-0. Both games tonight. Ryan Roland Smith, former pitcher in the bigs and part of Seattle's broadcast team. And he's been with us before, though it's been a little while. Ryan, welcome back to the show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It has been a while, man. These months just kind of just keep rolling on.
Yeah, well, listen, we had to make you earn it. We gave you an audition. Yeah. And then the people said, this guy's pretty interesting. Bring him back. And we said, all right, we're bored. Call him.
There you go.
Listen.
Whenever you guys run dry of topics, just call me. I'll have something for you.
Bro, I have no doubt because your wit is on point. Everybody who's heard you knows, I think, that you're a rising star of the broadcast business. But let's start skinning the cat here. Listen. It's one thing to stand in the batter. I'm going to look at it from the hitter's perspective. One thing to stand in the batter's box and be a lefty and, you know, say Chapman throwing 100 and then he's got a wipeout slider. Like, that's like maybe not a fear, but a baseball reality, okay, that you're probably not going to do well. The inability to do something that you've done millions of times since the age of 5, to throw a baseball 15 feet on a fly, to lose that power, to me, what in the world is Jose Altuve thinking, and how does he fight his way out of this?
You know, I was thinking about this. After the second throw, he was playing on that shift, so he's playing in shallow right field. As soon as he picked that ball up and you see the little glove pump and the hesitation, you knew right away it wasn't good things happening inside that head. And Jose Altuve, from what we've seen, the way he reacted to the drama in the off season with the sign stealing and everything else, how emotional this dude is. He's a perfect candidate, and I don't want to say he's got the yips, but there's different levels of the yips or the creature, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But he is a perfect candidate. This is a guy who cares so much how people view him, what people think of him, and when you saw the third error he made. Especially after the one he made when the home run was hit after that, and it was damage and it was doom and gloom, that he has some yips happening. And I would say probably 70% of baseball players have dealt with the yips in some form. I had it picking the ball up, and this goes back to spring training, picking the ball up on the mound, throwing it to first base, especially on bunts. I could not throw the ball to first base. So literally, when we had PFPs going on in spring training, you start on third baseline. You take your turn when you're doing your PFPs on field two, whatever it is in spring training on those backfields. And you do have fans around. People are watching it. I don't know who wants to watch a bunch of PFPs. It's kind of boring. But people are watching. I used to start on that line and sneak. And once you have take your turn, you go over to the first baseline to basically say I'm done, and the group moves on. I used to sneak behind home plate as if I'd taken my turn.
Wow!
I did not want it in front of anyone. And it's this thing, and you know, I was a pretty emotional dude, and I know some other guys who I've played with guys who've had the yips before, whether it's in the field or off the mound. But this is not something that just goes away. If you have just a touch of it, it's gonna stick around for a while, and it's the most loneliest feeling. The minute that ball is hit to you, or you're about to throw that pitch, or whatever it may be, is the most loneliest feeling on the planet.
Ryan, let me ask you this though, because that's a lot more than I 70%. That stuns me to hear. If you said 7 to 10%, I would have said that makes sense. But so on some level, and there's varying degrees of the yips or brain cramps, if you will, almost it affects a lot of people. Having said that, and knowing how dark that tunnel can get emotionally, but also knowing what the Astros did, possibly stealing multiple championships from two different teams, do you think baseball players, either retired players or current players, are reveling in watching Altuve implode, or do you think they feel sorry for him?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, Buster only wrote a tweet just recently talking about how you know, good of a guy he is, and I really feel for him and everything else. And I hear what he's saying. Look, Jose Altuve, you know, he's a good teammate. If you know the guy, I don't know him personally, but you feel for him in that regard. Because if you've been there and you know the feeling, you feel for him. And a lot of guys, you're talking about ex-players or current players, they all understand and feel and know what he's going through. But on the flip side of that, when you're coming off, regardless of how good of a teammate you are, how much you care about this game, you're coming off a situation where basically, as a hitter, the toughest thing to do, you know, pitching is deception. You have to decipher the code, fastball, curveball. You basically took that away from the opposition. Mm. You knew what pitch was coming. If you're a player, and I'm a pitcher, you know that in the back of your mind. You may feel bad for him if you can relate in some way, if you have dealt with the yips. But in reality, when you're watching this guy, you're like, hey, man, that's what happens, dude. And I still think, like I said earlier, I still think what he went through in the off season, or what he dealt with, or the way he handled it, is a direct correlation to what you're seeing right now in the field with these yips.
Yeah, it's interesting, Ryan, that you say that, because you think about the emotional side of sport, and we say this in, say, golf, for instance. Both BT and I love golf. In golf, if you don't have a short memory, you're never going to be successful. If you're thinking man, I shouldn't. Why did I go for that one? I shouldn't. Like, if you're thinking about it, then there's no chance to be successful. But I also realize this from, you know, being a professional athlete myself. When you start thinking on a field of play, you're dead because you're half a step slow, right? And then you're constantly trying to catch up. So it's an emotion thing, obviously. It's a timing thing. How do you get rid of it?
And man, it's tough. There's a few people on the planet who can really dive in and make this a quick fix. But I think this is one of those things. And for the pitchers who I've known who have had the yips, like my brother-in-law, David Arzman, he's an ex-player. He played for a lot of different teams. Throwing 50%, right? And you're an athlete, so you understand that when it's something that should be automatic, picking a ball up like Chuck Knobloch, you saw him back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, first real instance of this we saw, and it is pretty prevalent. You just don't see it on the surface. But it's one of these things that you just have to embrace it. You have to put that little creature on your shoulder and say, all right, you're here to stay, dude. You're a part of my career at this point in time. I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to laugh at myself. I know it's the playoffs. I totally get it. But I'm going to laugh this off. And basically, if you try and run from it, you're done. You have to do reps after reps, and you have to do the reps in front of people and in front of your peers as much as you possibly can. For example, Jose Altuve, get there at 2:30, 3 o'clock, get down the field, get those ground balls. I guarantee he's going to be taking extra ground balls because that's kind of the stock standard, right, if you're having trouble staying at first base. But get your teammates out there. Make them laugh at you a little bit. Make yourself a little bit more vulnerable. Get comfortable being vulnerable, and then that's going to be the fastest way to get over this. And that's something Chris Davis with the Oakland A's. He had the yips thrown from left field. He's DHing now, but when he played in the field, he still has it. When you watch him closely, he kind of shot puts the ball in there if he ever plays out in left field anymore. But it's just something he deals with. But one technique was just getting his teammates, his peers around him, people who he cares about their opinion, and watch him – suffer through this, and it just lets that vulnerability be a little bit more comfortable. I think that's the fastest way you can get over this.
That makes sense. So, yeah. Ryan Roland Smith, who was pitching the bigs for a couple of years, also part of Seattle's broadcast team. The back, you know, you go from the yips to the back. Clayton Kershaw, once again, is dealing with, you know, and I said this yesterday, from somebody who had back surgery. I don't know, back spasm is a very benign way of saying you're jacked up and we don't know when this is going to really start feeling good. This is a problem that's been around now for a while. He can't get his bullpen work. So even if he's ready to go, how sharp can he be? What can we expect?
Yeah, I've had to deal with back issues. I've had situations where I've come off a, you know, IL stint and my back feels fine, but your command is missing.
Yeah.
Or you're hesitant or whatever it may be that, like, you stomp that front foot, that landing foot. He's really violent. Mechanically, he's really violent in his delivery. So this is something with him. I think him and we've seen this year, he kind of had a bit of a resurgence when it came to stuff physically. Obviously, mentally, he's always going to be there until he's 42 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But physically, he had a little bit of a resurgence this year. I think Clayton Kershaw, even at 80%, will get people out. But I think for him, and we're talking about obviously the mental emotional side of this, if it's to a point where it's completely overwhelming you in between pitches where you're like, man, this is crushing me, and you can't focus in that 10 to 12 seconds before you throw that pitch,
mm-hmm.
well, then you got to reconsider. But I think with Clayton Kershaw and watching him pitch and how, you know, passionate he is about this, I think him at 80%, I still think he can get out. And I think it's one of those things, go as hard as you can for as long as you can. And that's something that Dave Roberts will just have to monitor if he does get back out there, if it's something he can deal with.
Yeah. You know, go ahead, Teague.
No, I was going to say, you know, the other series, back to the Astros, the Rays are, they're so damn impressive. I mean, we kind of don't pay attention to them. And then, hey, wait, they're leading the East? Wait, they're the best team in the American League? It's amazing how, and it's probably because there's not these high-paid superstars. I mean, what's the stat that I saw? That their payroll is basically Altuve's salary. I mean, they're so under the radar. And it's amazing to think about because it's such a superstar-driven, like, at least media league. Are you surprised at this success? We've seen it coming for a couple of years, but, I mean, they're a game away from being in the World Series, and they're probably going to be the favorites when they get there.
I am a little bit surprised. I'm not going to lie, especially, you know, when you're playing in the AL East. That was obviously weaker this year. The Red Sox weren't a factor. You know, the Blue Jays were a little bit of a factor. Obviously, they made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit surprised. I do compare them, though. I remember, the 2008 Tampa Bay Rays. Going into that spring training, one of my best buddies, Grant Balfour, who was ended up being the closer for the A's for a lot of years after that. But he was on that team, and they were young. I remember 2007, that was terrible. But he was like, hey, man, look, we're going to be studs next year. I'm like, really? He said, yeah, man. All these young players, he was talking about Kazmir, Carl Crawford, all these young players, you guys, they have a blast. They have a lot of fun, and there's that chemistry. Grant Balfour told me for that 2008 team, going into 2008, he's never been – baseball, obviously, it's a team sport, but it's really not. It's super individualized. But he said, man, I feel like I'm on an actual team for the first time in my career.
Wow.
And he played in the playoffs prior to that. I think with this team that we're watching right now, it's a replica of that, where it's a young, youthful – it's a youthful team with a ton of energy. Kevin Cash has obviously gained everyone's respect. Even, you know, Blake Snell might make the snide comment about coming out of the game early, whatever it may be. But, man, he has everyone's respect. If he's making a decision, even if he's looking at that iPad and analytics tells him to do something, they're all in. And I think if you have that from the top with a young team, man, you can do some amazing things. But they are so dynamic. I mean, some of the arms coming out of the bullpen, they get the chance to showcase these kids that no one knows who they are. And some of the nastiest 98-mile-per-hour combos with sliders that you've ever seen. Man, there are so many ways they can beat you. And I think if you can buy into Kevin Cash's every little decision he makes, even if it's a little bit, you know, against the grain or it's, you know, obviously analytical driven, you can do amazing things, and especially in a 60-game season. So I'm not surprised in that regard, but of course, whenever you have, like you mentioned, you know, the payroll and all these other little things, I mean, yeah, of course, it's fun to watch.
Ryan, good stuff. Ryan Roland Smith, former pitcher, Mariners broadcaster. Thanks for hopping back on. Enjoy the rest of the League Championship Series. Maybe we'll hop you back up for the World Series. Thanks, man.
Sounds good. Anytime, guys.
Take care,
buddy. There he is. All right, Teague. Let's get the update. Coming up after that, the Power Five. They've always kind of had their own rules, but What they're possibly plotting is game changer. We'll get to that coming up next after Axe Update, which is right now. Here's Rich. Hey, coming up on Sunday, week 6 of the NFL on CBS, most of you will see an AFC Central battle, AFC North battle between Baker Mayfield's Browns and Big Ben Steelers, along with other regional action. And the day begins with JB and the guys breaking it all down, the hottest topics around the NFL. The NFL today starting noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, Sunday on CBS. Week 6 already. Here we go. Next hour, John Cooper, the Tampa Bay Lightning head coach, Stanley Cup champs, and a little tie to Tiki's Cavs historically, right?
Yeah, it was. And that was funny. Losing and then winning.
Yeah.
They were the number one seed, right? And they lost to Columbus.
They lost in the first round. Then they was rocking the Virginia hat, right? Is that
what
it was?
After the game. He rocked the Virginia hat.
All right. So we'll talk to him, have a little fun. Lightning, we need, you know, give them some love, obviously, won the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we're in a situation now. We shouldn't be surprised here, Teague. It's been intimated strongly for a while, but there's a little movement now. How long before we have Division One, Division Two, Division Three, and of course above that would be Power Five division? It looks like it's coming.
Yeah,
where are we at?
Yeah, I think. Look, this is. It feels like this has been a long time coming, BT. Now, this was a Knight Commission survey. This is a commission that obviously looks at the interest of college sports, not just football and basketball, but all college sports. And they put out a survey to all 351 of the D1 schools, and of the Power Five, 61%, which is about 40 schools, 61% said they'd be in favor of backing away from the NCAA and forming their own division, obviously still under the purview of the NCAA, which is the governing body. For those who like get confused by the NCAA is just all of the member institutions. They govern themselves, and you know Mark Emmert's the head of it. But as we saw this past early in the year, they don't have a lot of power or decision-making ability to do anything. It's why every conference and every school really had their own protocols around the coronavirus, and that became frustrating to a lot of them, BT. They've also waffled and have sought congressional approval and oversight for name, image, and likeness, this legislation that we've been talking about for a while, which is likely to be voted on in January. It's going to get passed. They just want some guidance on it, but they're in position to be the ones that are supposed to be guiding. So I think there's been a budding frustration amongst especially the big schools, the Power Five schools, as it pertains to decision making and financial autonomy. So do I think that this isn't a proposal yet? I mean, eventually it will be. Mm-hmm. But do I think that this is the right move? I do. Because think about what we talk about when we look at major college sports, and football and basketball are the ones that jump to the top of the forefront to the forefront of our minds. But those are the important ones to talk about. How much like a professional endeavor does it feel like? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's the television contract. It's the the salaries that the head coaches are making. Dabo's making what, 8-9? Maybe
so's Harbaugh.
Maybe 10. They're making a ton of money. I mean, these are for-profit entities, even though they're not-for-profit, you know, organizations. And so it's becoming more and more professional. I don't want to throw that word in there because it flies in the face of amateurism. Mm-hmm. But what this likely will lead to is the NCAA backing away, letting the Power Fives or whoever wants to be included, because this includes Notre Dame as well, of creating their own division with their own rules on scholarships, how they spend their finances, you know, the rules that they make, how the playoff likely will be, you know, handled going forward. It makes sense because this game is looking so much more like a professional game than the amateur game that it was supposed to be, you know, decades ago.
Would they still be beholden to the recruiting parameters?
That would be determined by the group, by the new division. So, think about this though, BT, because this is how it is now. Like the D1 council or the D2 council or the D3 council, they're responsible for making recruiting rules inside the NCAA. Mm-hmm. They recommend it. They come up with a protocol, say the D1 council, we only want to give you 85 scholarships. Okay, great. That's what we all agreed upon. So it's not just the Power Five, it's the Group of Five, it's all 350 teams that are D1. They all adhere to this one rule, even though it might be good for, I don't know, Randolph-Macon in Southwest Virginia. It's not necessarily the right thing for Clemson, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Mm-hmm. But those one set of rules govern everything. So this would be the Power Five saying, fantastic, D1 Council, you can keep governing the Randolph-Macons and the George Masons and all those other little schools that need this overarching guidance because they don't have the resources to do it. But we, as a Power Five, as an entity that makes a ton of money and generates a ton of interest, we want to be able to make our own decisions for ourselves and form a new division underneath the NCAA. The NCAA will obviously govern it still,
yep,
but it'll be a breakaway from what we've traditionally seen. And it feels like it's time. It really does. I mean, it's a slippery slope in a lot of ways, but it feels like it's time.
Would they still be able to play in the big dance? Or they had like their own tournament?
Yes, yes. No, they would. That's carved out, at least according to this survey proposition. It's not even a proposal, but whatever.
The survey, to kind of take the temperature. So you said roughly 60% of the Power Five schools said, mm-hmm, that, yes, they're interested.
Yep.
What would the impetus be behind saying no for the 40% that did not express positive interest right now?
Maybe they feel like, you know, if they'll get lost. Right, if the big boys start being able to make all the decisions, then we get lost.
You mean like a Wake Forest in the ACC?
That's right. Or,
okay, I got you.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a small school from another,
I got you.
You know, Illinois,
yeah,
or etc. They get lost in the
Indiana
conversation.
Football.
Indiana.
No,
just,
I got
it
you.
You guys even part of this thing anymore?
Yeah.
Even though they are, obviously, because they're part of the Power Five conference, but they get lost. Mm-hmm. Here's the interesting thing, though, BT. You're starting to see this everywhere. So this is being talked about in the NCAA, but you're seeing it in like soccer, international soccer as well. Like there's a proposal that's being put up in the English Premier League by the American owners. So the Liverpool, which is the Boston, you know, the Boston group that own the Red Sox, and Manchester United, which is obviously the Glazers who own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're trying to reposition this economic power as well. So I think it's a direct response to the coronavirus because so much money has been lost. Without fans, without you know the tertiary revenues that come from putting on live events,
yeah,
that it's exposed the weakness in these organizations, the NCAA obviously, and in some ways the Premier League, the English Premier League. So there's these things that are happening as a reaction to what's going on with the coronavirus in this world. And I'm not saying that that's the right catalyst to make it happen, but it does feel like it's time for these type of conversations at least,
yeah,
to happen.
Yeah, I'm less enthusiastic about this. I'm not saying it's not time for a conversation. It's always, mm-hmm, time to have a conversation and exchange ideas. I'm fine with that. But, you know, if the pandemic is the main impetus here.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it is either.
I think the pandemic is highlighting the inefficiencies. It's,
yep,
it's highlighting the problem in, yep, a significant way. And the Power Five, they're frustrated by it. Because think about Princeton, and I'll just use Princeton because it's always on top of my head because AJ's committed to go there next year. Princeton, mm-hmm, can cancel their football season, and it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Financially, it does matter, obviously, to the kids that are there. You feel for them because they're not going to play a false season. Maybe they'll play in the spring. Who knows? But financially, it doesn't matter at all. When Ohio State canceled their football season, that meant a whole hell of a lot. You know what I mean?
It impacted the entire state.
The entire state.
The entire state.
The university, for sure. It was impactful in a,
yeah,
massive way.
Yeah.
So
they want to have control over those decisions.
Exactly. So the coronavirus didn't cause that, mm-hmm, but it highlighted the problem with it.
The inadequacies from their point of view.
And so that's the difference. That's why, you know, Princeton, which is D1, uh-huh, right? It's not necessarily as affected by the coronavirus because they're not putting in as much money, in much resources into the football program.
For sure.
They're also not taking out as much, meaning earning as much.
It's true.
But Ohio State is, Michigan is,
yep,
Clemson is, Virginia,
yeah,
is even. You know what I mean? So
yep,
Miami, if they don't play football, it severely hampers their athletic departments. And so having autonomy – over those decisions of, you know, these 65 teams, as opposed to lumping those 65 in with all 350. Mm-hmm. That makes a difference, man. It's different strokes for different folks because of what's at stake for the Power Five monetarily.
Understood. I'm a lot more on board with this from a football point of view compared to basketball.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to this question. Would they be able to go halfway in? Like, could they break away partially and say, you know what?
Well, honestly, they could do whatever they want, I think, BT.
Okay, so they can still remain as aligned currently if they wanted to from a basketball point of view, but just break off from a Power 5 football point of view.
And I think from my understanding of what I read, and again, this is nothing. This is just a conversation that's happening. This is a survey. This is not a proposal.
Hey, but conversations bring – think about the conversation. Should athletes get paid? Should
that's right.
The image
that's right.
and likeness? And here we are.
That's right.
I mean, conversations generally bring some change if they're positioned properly and they're loud enough.
It might take a long time. It took a really long time for name, image, and likeness. But you're right. From what I've been reading, the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournament would not be affected by this.
Okay.
Because you're right. That's a big moneymaker for everybody, and not just the big schools, not just the Power Five. If Princeton gets to the Elite Eight, right, that's a big deal for Princeton. You know what I mean? They're not losing economically. So,
by the way, they did that. No, was that Penn? That was Penn.
That was Penn. That's
79,
right.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, Teak.
I think basketball is different. It's a different conversation. As it pertains to this survey that was put out to the Power Five schools. And look, I love the conversation because it forces the reality to smack people in the face, as opposed to just assuming, oh, we got an amateur sport that we're running. I forget that we're making millions of dollars. You know what I mean? Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
It makes it real to what's actually happening.
Yeah. There's also, you think about, not that this would be the main driving force, but you think about the differences. Like take a school like Seton Hall, which is in a non-Power 5, but obviously in a prolific conference.
That's right.
Villanova's rated number one in a lot of preseason polls for basketball, and Jay's won two national championships in the last 5 or 6 years, so we know how good Villanova – Creighton's a top-10 team, too. But take a school like Seton Hall, right? They can have a big game, say Villanova comes into their house, and they sell it out, which they will. They have 18,000 people. Which is, or even 20, which is on par with the largest college basketball venues outside of the Carrier Dome and maybe one or two others.
Mm-hmm.
But you take like a college football program like the Horseshoe or Michigan Stadium or Penn State or Death Valley, where you have over 100,000, and now you compare it to Akron.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I believe the number's 38,000. There's a bare minimum seats for D1. It's either 38 or 43. I think it's 38. It's kind of fluctuated. But the point being, there's a massive disparity just in terms of seats. Not in basketball, though.
No. Yeah.
So the football seems more likely, but then again, maybe they break away in totality. Well, it's a story we'll follow.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Sure. Again, this is just in the nascent conversation stage, but it's an interesting conversation that's starting to happen.
Yep. Well, you win a Stanley Cup, you get a seat on the show. John Cooper of the Lightning stops by. That's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.